And welcome to Tesla's third quarter 2024 Q&A webcast. My name is Travis Axelrod, Head of Investor Relations, and I'm joined today by Elon Musk, Vaibhav Taneja, and a number of other executives. Our Q3 results were announced at about 3:00 P.M. Central Time in the update deck we published at the same link as this webcast. During this call, we will discuss our business outlook and make forward-looking statements. These comments are based on our predictions and expectations as of today. Actual events or results could differ materially due to a number of risks and uncertainties, including those mentioned in our most recent filings with the SEC. During the question and answer portion of today's call, please limit yourself to one question and one follow-up. Please use the raise hand button to join the question queue. Before we jump into Q&A, Elon has some opening remarks. Elon?
Thank you. So to recap, as some are seeing, some in the automotive industry are seeing year-over-year declines in order volumes in Q3, Tesla at the same time has achieved record deliveries. In fact, I think if you look at EV companies worldwide, to the best of my knowledge, no EV company is even profitable. And I'm not, to the best of my knowledge, there's no EV division of any company, of any existing auto company that is profitable. So it is notable that Tesla is profitable despite a very challenging automotive environment. And this quarter actually is a record Q3 for us. So we produced our 7th million vehicle actually just yesterday, so congratulations to the teams that made it happen at Tesla. That's a staggeringly immense amount of work to make 7 million cars. So, let's see, and we also have energy storage business is growing like wildfire, with strong demand for both Megapack and Powerwall. And as people know, on October 10th, we laid out our vision for an autonomous and electric future that I think is very compelling. Also, you know, the Tesla team did a phenomenal job there with actually giving people an opportunity to experience the future, where you have humanoid robots walking among the crowd. Not, you know, a canned video presentation or anything, but literally walking among the crowd, serving drinks and whatnot. And we had 50 autonomous vehicles. There were 20 Cybercabs, but there were an additional 30 Model Ys operating fully autonomously the entire night, carrying thousands of people with no incidents the entire night. So, and for those who weren't there, that it's worth emphasizing that the Cybercab had no steering wheel or brake or accelerator pedals, meaning there was no way for anyone to intervene manually, even if they wanted to, and the whole night went very smoothly. So, regarding the vehicle business, we are still on track to deliver more affordable models starting in the first half of 2025. You know, this is, I think probably people are wondering, well, what should they assume for vehicle sales growth next year? And at the risk of to take a bit of risk here, I do want to give some rough estimate, which is, I think, it's 20%-30% vehicle growth next year. You know, notwithstanding negative external events, like if there's some force majeure events, like some big war breaks out or interest rates go sky high or something like that, then, you know, we can't overcome massive force majeure events. But I think with our lower-cost vehicles, with the advent of autonomy, something like a 20%-30% growth next year is my best guess. And then Cybercab reaching volume production in 2026. I do feel confident of Cybercab reaching volume production in 2026. Not just starting production, but reaching volume production in 2026. And that, you know, that should be substantial growth. We're aiming for, you know, at least 2 million units a year of Cybercab. That'll be in more than one factory, but I think it's at least 2 million units a year, maybe 4 million ultimately. So, yeah, these are just my best guesses, but if you ask me what my best guess is, those are my best guesses. The the 46, the cell 4680 lines, the team is actually doing great work there. The 4680 is rapidly approaching the point where it is the most competitive cell. So when you consider the fully landed cost of a battery pack, fully landed in the US, net of incentives and duties, the 4680 is tracking to be the most competitive, meaning lower cost per kilowatt hour fully considered than any other alternative, which is not quite there yet, but we're close to being there, which I think is extremely exciting. And we've got a lot of ideas to go well beyond that. So I think if we execute well, the 4680 will have the Tesla internally produced cell will be the most cost competitive cell in North America. A testament to a tremendous amount of hard work there by the team. So that's it. We'll continue to buy a lot of cells from our competitors. Our intent is not to make cells just internally. So I don't want to set off any alarm bells here. We're obviously increasing substantially our vehicle output and our stationary storage output. So we need a lot of cells. And most of them will still come from suppliers, but I think it is some good news that the Tesla internal cell is tracking to be the most competitive in the US. So with respect to autonomy, as people are experiencing in the cars, really from week to week, there are significant improvements in the miles between interventions. So with the new version 12.5, the release of Full Self-Driving and Cybertruck, the combining the code into a single stack so that the city driving and the end-to-end highway driving are one stack, which is a big improvement for the highway driving. So it's just all neural nets. And the release of actually Smart Summon. We try to have a sense of humor here at Tesla. And we're also, so that's 12.5. Version 13 of FSD is going out soon. I'm sure we'll elaborate more on that later in the call. We expect to see roughly a 5 or 6-fold improvement in miles between interventions compared to 12.5. And actually, looking at the year as a whole, the improvement in miles between interventions, we think will be at least 3 orders of magnitude. So that's a very dramatic improvement in the course of a year. And we expect that trend to continue next year. So the current internal expectation, emphasizing internal expectation for the Tesla FSD having longer miles between interventions than human is the second quarter of next year. Which means it may end up being the third quarter, but it's next. It seems extremely likely to be next year. Sure, do you want to say anything about that?
Yeah, in measuring miles between critical interventions, like you mentioned, Elon, we already made a 100x improvement with 12.5 from starting of this year, and then with V13 release, we expect to be 1000x from the beginning, from January of this year, on my production release software. And this came in because of technology improvements, going to end-to-end, having higher frame rate, partly also helped by hardware floors, more capabilities, so on. And we hope that we continue to scale the neural network, the data, the training compute, et cetera. By Q2 next year, we should cross over the average human miles per critical intervention, or like collision in that case.
I mean, that is just unvarnished our internal estimate.
Yes. Yeah.
That's no sandbagging or anything else. Our internal estimate is Q2 of next year to be safer than human, and then to continue with rapid improvements thereafter. A vast majority of humanity has no idea that Teslas can drive themselves. So, especially for something like a Model 3 or Model Y, it looks like a normal car. So, you don't expect a normal car to be able to be intelligent enough to drive itself. A Cybercab looks different. Cybertruck looks different, but Model Y and Model 3 they're good-looking cars, but they look fairly normal. You don't expect a fairly normal-looking car to have the intelligence, you know, enough AI to be able to drive itself, but it does. So we do want to expose that to more people, and so we're doing every time we have a significant improvement in the software, we'll roll out another sort of 30-day trial. So to encourage people to try it again, and we are seeing a significant improvement in adoption. So the take rate for FSD has improved substantially, especially after the 10-10 event. So there's no need to wait for robot taxi or Cybercab to experience full autonomy. We expect to achieve that next year with our existing vehicle lineup.
Smart Summon gives a small taste of what it's going to look like, the car able to drive itself to the user within private parking lots. Currently it's speed limited, but then it's going to quickly be increased. And we already had more than a million usage items of Smart Summon.
Yep. So we have for Tesla employees in the Bay Area, we already are offering a ride-hailing capability. So you can actually use with the development app, you can request a ride, and it'll take you anywhere in the Bay Area. We do have a safety driver for now, but the software required to do that. We've developed, and I mean, David, do you want to elaborate on that?
Yeah, sure. It's David. We showed some screenshots of this in the Q1 shareholder deck, and this is real. We've been testing it for the better part of the year, and the building blocks that we needed in order to build this functionality and deliver it to production, we've been thinking about and working on for years. It just so happens that we've used those building blocks to deliver great features for our customers in the meantime, such as sharing your profile, synchronizing it across cars so that every single car that you jump into, whether it's, you know, another car that you own or a car that somebody's loaned to you or a rental car that you jump into, it looks exactly like yours. Everything synchronized, seat mirror positions, you know, media, navigation, everything is the same, just what you would expect from one of our robo-taxis. But we gave that functionality to our customers right now because we built it intending for it to be used in the future. Releasing that functionality now. All the end-to-end cybersecurity that we knew we were going to need to deliver that functionality, sending a navigation to destination from your phone to the vehicle. And so you're doing that now with the ride-hailing app, but it's something that we've made available to customers for years. Seeing the progress on a route in the mobile app, that's something you'll need for the ride-hailing app, but again, we released it in the meantime. So it's not like we're just starting to think about this stuff right now while we're building out, you know, the early stages of our ride-hailing network. We've been thinking about this for quite a long time, and we're excited to get the functionality out there.
Yeah, and we do expect to roll out ride-hailing in California, Texas next year to the public. The California is somewhat, there's quite a long regulatory approval process. I think we should get approval next year, but it's contingent upon regulatory approval. Texas is a lot faster, so it's, I'd say like we'll definitely have it available in Texas and probably have it available in California, subject to regulatory approval. And maybe some other states actually next year as well, but at least California, Texas. Um, So I think that'll be very exciting. That's really a profound change. Tesla becomes more than a sort of vehicle and battery manufacturing company at that point. So we published our Q3 vehicle safety report, which shows one crash for every 7 million miles of Autopilot. That compares to the US average of one crash roughly every 700,000 miles. So it's currently showing a 10x safety improvement relative to the US average. And we continue to expand our AI training capacity to accommodate the needs of both FSD and Optimus. We are currently not a training compute constraint. That's probably the biggest limiting factor is that the FSD is actually getting so good that it takes us a while to actually find mistakes. When you start getting to where it can take 10,000 miles to find a mistake, it takes a while to actually figure out which it is this build, is this software build better than is software build A better than software build B? It actually takes a while to figure it out because neither one of them are making mistakes. What takes a long time to make mistakes. So that's actually the single biggest limiting factor is how long does it take us to figure out which version is better. Sort of high class problem. Obviously, having a giant fleet is very helpful for figuring this out. And then with Optimus, we showed a massive improvement in Optimus's dexterity and movement on October 10th, and our next gen hand and forearm, which has 22 degrees of freedom, double the prior hand and forearm. It's extremely human-like. It also has much better tactile sensing. I feel confident in saying that we have the most advanced humanoid robot by long shot. And we're moreover the only company that really has all of the ingredients necessary to scale humanoid robots. Because the things that what other companies are missing is that they're missing the AI brain, and they're missing the ability to really scale to very high volume production. So you sometimes see some impressive video demos, but they lack the localized AI and the ability to scale volume to very high numbers. As I've said on a few occasions before, I think Optimus will ultimately be the most valuable part. So, and I think it has a good chance of being the most valuable product ever made. For the energy business, that's doing extremely well. And there's the opportunity ahead is gigantic. The Lathrop Megapack factory reached 200 megapacks a week, which is now a 40 gigawatt hour a year run rate. And we have a second factory in Shanghai that will begin with a 20 gigawatt hour a year run rate in Q1 next year, so just next quarter. That'll also scale up. It won't be long before we're shipping 100 gigawatt hours a year stationary storage at Tesla. That'll ultimately grow, I think, to multiple terawatt hours per year. It has to, actually, in order to have a sustainable energy future. If you're not at the terawatt scale, you're not really moving the needle. So. If you look at our admittedly very complicated last master plan, which I think actually has too much detail, I'll ask Grok to analyze it and
shorten it up.
Yeah, give us the TLDR on the last master plan. But we showed in that master plan that it is possible to take all of Earth to a fully sustainable energy situation using sustainable energy power generation. And batteries and electric transport. And there are no fundamental material limitations. Like there's not some very rare material that we don't have enough of on Earth. We actually have enough of the raw materials to take all of human civilization, make it fully sustainable. And even if civilization dramatically increased its electricity usage, it would still be fully sustainable. You know, one way to think of the progress of a civilization, this may sound a little esoteric, but is percentage completion of Kardashev scale. So Kardashev scale one would be you're using all the power of a planet. We're currently less than 1% on Kardashev level one. Level two would be you're using all the power of the sun. And level three, all the power of the galaxy. So we got a long way to go. Long way to go. When you think in Kardashev terms, it becomes obvious that by far the biggest source of energy is the sun. Everything else is in the noise. So in conclusion, Tesla is focused on building the future of energy, transport, robotics, and AI. And this is a time when others are just focused on managing around near-term trends. We think what we're doing is the right approach. And if we execute on our objectives, and I think we will, Tesla will become the most valuable company in the world, and probably by a long shot. I want to thank the Tesla team once again for strong execution in a tough operating environment. And we're looking forward to building an incredibly exciting future. Thank you.
Great. Thank you very much, Elon. And DevOps has some opening remarks as well.
Yeah, thanks. Our Q3 results were overall positive and once again demonstrated the scale to which businesses evolved over the years with the generation of record operating cash flows of $6.3 billion. Our automotive revenues grew both quarter on quarter and year on year. While we had unit volume growth, we did experience reduction in ASPs, primarily due to the impact of financing incentives. As a reminder, we are providing these incentives primarily using third-party banks and financial institutions and recognize the cost of these incentives as an upfront reduction to revenue. We released FSD for Cybertruck and other features like Actually Smart Someone, like Elon talked about in North America, which contributed $326 million of revenues in the quarter. We continue to see elevated levels of regulatory credit sales with over $2 billion of revenues so far this year. To expand on this, at an industry level, China continues to outperform US and Europe by a factor of three. And if there is something to be learned from that, this gives a signal of what is to come in other regions as customers' acceptance of EV grows. And we feel that is the right strategy to build affordable and more compelling leads. Our focus remains on growing unit volume while avoiding a buildup of inventory. To support this strategy, we're continuing to offer extremely compelling vehicle financing options in every market. When you compare any vehicle in our lineup with other OEMs, we believe our vehicles provide much better value, particularly when you consider the safety features, performance, and unparalleled software functionalities, like David also talked about, include also what Ashok had talked about around autonomy, music options, parental controls, and much more. While every vehicle in our lineup comes up with these capabilities, there is an awareness gap, not just with buyers, but at times even with existing owners. We plan on making these more visible in our interactions with both existing and future customers. Automotive margins improved quarter over quarter as a result of FSD feature release discussed before. Increase in our overall production and delivery volume, continued benefit from commodity pricing, and more localized deliveries in region, which resulted in lower freight and duties. Sustaining these margins in Q4, however, will be challenging given the current economic environment. Note that we are focused on the cost per vehicle, and there are numerous work streams within the company to squeeze out costs without compromising on customer experience.
Yeah, something that's a helpful, hopefully a helpful macro trend is if there's a decline in interest rates, this has a massive effect on the on automotive demand. The vast majority of people, it's the demand is driven by the monthly payment. Can they afford the monthly payment? So like most likely we'll see continued decline in interest rates, which helps with affordability of vehicles.
Yeah, I mean, that is one trend which we observed in the industry, that, you know, because of the affordability being impacted because of interest rates, people are holding on to the cars longer, especially in the U.S. And that is actually having an impact on the overall industry, too. As we discussed earlier, as we discussed in back orders, energy deployments fluctuate quarter over quarter due to customer readiness, location of orders being fulfilled, and not necessarily an indicator of demand or production within the quarter. While we did see a decline in Q3, we expect to grow deployments sequentially in Q4 to end the year with more than double of last year. Energy margins in Q3 were a record at more than 30%. This is a function of mix of projects being deployed in the quarter. Note that there will be fluctuation in margins as we manage through deployments and our inventory. Our pipeline and backlog continue to grow quarter over quarter as we fill our 2025 production slots, and we're doing our level best to keep up with the demand. Just coming back on automotive margins, I talked about what is happening. One other thing which I want to also share is that we will continue to keep whatever we can to squeeze, like I said before, about squeezing out the cost. But this is something which we also are very capable of. I mean, just in Q3, we reached our lowest cost per vehicle. And that is a trend which we want to keep focus on. Then going on to service and other, we continue to show improvements in Q3. This was a result of better performance, both in our service business, which includes collision, part sales, and merchandise, and continued growth in supercharging. These fleet-based revenues will continue to grow as the overall fleet size increases. Our operating expenses declined quarter over quarter and on a year-on-year basis. This is partially due to the restructuring we undertook in Q2. Cost saving from these initiatives were partially offset by increase in costs related to our AI efforts. We've started using the GPU cluster based out of our factory in Austin ahead of schedule, and are on track to get 50K GPUs deployed in Texas by the end of this month. One thing which I'd like to elaborate is that we're being very judicious on our AI compute spend too, and saying how best we can utilize the existing infrastructure before making further investments. On the CapEx front, we had over $3.5 billion in the quarter. This was a sequential increase largely because of investments in AI compute. We now expect the CapEx for the year to be in excess of $11 billion. We shared our vision for the future at the WeRobot event at the beginning of the month. The Tesla team is hyper-focused on delivering on that vision, and all efforts are underway to make it a reality. While we've achieved significant progress this year, it will take time to get this as we pioneer new and incredibly complex technologies and navigate a fragmented regulatory landscape. The future is incredibly bright, and I want to thank the Tesla team once again for all their hard work.
Great. Thank you very much, Vaibhav. Now we'll go to investor questions. The first one is Tesla still on track to deliver the more affordable model next year, as mentioned by Elon earlier, and how does it align with your AI product roadmap?
Sure. I mean, as Elon and Vaibhav both said, we are in plan to meet that in the first half of next year. Our mission has always been to lower the cost of our vehicles to increase the adoption of sustainable energy and transport. Part of that is lowering the cost for current vehicles, which is where all of the personally owned vehicles that we sell today come in. But the next stage in that really is it fits into AI roadmap is when we bring in robotaxis, which lowers the initial cost of getting into an EV. And that's really where we see the marriage of EV roadmap and the AI roadmap.
Yeah. It'll be like with incentives sub 30K, mm-hmm. which is kind of a key threshold.
Great. Thank you very much. Question next. When can we expect Tesla to give us the $25,000 non-robotaxi regular car model?
We're not making a
non-robot. Yeah, all our vehicles today are robotaxis.
I think we've made very clear that we're like the future is autonomous. It's going to be, and I actually said this many years ago, but that in my strong belief, and I believe that is panning out to be true, and it'll be very obvious in retrospect, is that the future is autonomous electric vehicles. Non-autonomous gasoline vehicles in the future will be like riding a horse and using a flip phone. It's not that there are no horses. Yeah, there are some horses, but they're unusual. They're niche. Everything's going to be electric autonomous. I think this is blindingly obvious at this point that is the future. A lot of automotive companies, most automotive companies, have not internalized this, which is surprising, because we've been shouting this from the rooftops for such a long time, and it will accrue to their detriment in the future. But all of our vehicles in the future will be autonomous.
Even today?
All the vehicles that we've really made, all the 7 million vehicles, the vast majority are capable of autonomy. We're currently making on the order of 35,000 autonomous vehicles a week. If you compare that to, say, Waymo's entire fleet, they have less than 1,000 cars. We make 35K a week.
Yeah, and our cars look normal.
Yeah, they mostly look normal. The Cybertruck looks,
yes,
thankfully, looks abnormal. And then the Cybercab/Robotaxi. We wanted to have something futuristic looking. I think it does look futuristic. It's worth noting with respect to the cyber cab, it's especially not just a revolution in vehicle design, but a revolution in vehicle manufacturing that is also coming with the cyber cab. The cycle time, like the units per hour of the cyber cab line, this is just really something special. I mean, this is probably half order of magnitude better than other car manufacturing lines. Not in the same league is what I'm saying. Not in the same league. I said several years ago that the hardest Tesla product to copy will be the factory. You can't just buy a factory.
You can't reverse engineer a factory. You just have to buy it.
Yeah, it's like, we're rapidly evolving in manufacturing technology. Having a regular 25K model is pointless.
Yeah,
it would be silly. Like, it would be completely at odds with what we believe.
In an autonomous world, what matters is the lowest cost per mile of efficiency of that vehicle, and that's what we've done with the rope taxi.
Exactly, autonomous. It's fully considered cost per mile is what matters. And if you try to make a car that is, essentially a hybrid manual automatic car, it's not going to be as good as a dedicated autonomous car. Cybercab is just not going to have steering wheels and pedals. It's fully designed, optimized for autonomy. It'll cost on the order of cost roughly 25K. So it is a 25K car, and you will be able to buy one on it exclusively if you want. Just won't have steering wheel and pedals. If you don't need it.
Great. Thank you very much. The next question is, what is Tesla doing to alleviate long wait times at service centers?
So we aim on solving problems at the source, so at the factory, before they can even affect our customers. We believe the best service is no service, and
yeah, it really is.
Don't even have them.
If the car doesn't break,
yeah, exactly.
That's the best thing.
Don't see anyone with the Tesla shirt. You either do it, fix the issue upstream, or do it remotely, do it through software. They can be at work or at home, and car can be parked, and we address and fix the issue. And we've partnered the field with service to make sure we're looking at the same issues. And additionally, just in Q3 and Q4 of this year alone, we have opened and will open in total at nearly 70 locations. And in North America, we significantly expand the size of each location and have doubled the size last year compared to this year.
Yeah, I think there's like actually a lot of merit to having large service centers, because you can have specialization of labor. You can start to approach like, yeah, it should be more factory like. Where you can have dedicated lanes for particular types of service. And it's way easier for somebody to become expert in a few different types of repairs than in every repair.
Exactly. This has helped us with the base set of these heavy repairs, like clogging up a lane. They've dedicated lanes for different types of repairs. And so it's throughput matters and really treating it like a factory.
Yeah, this is where Tesla's structure, I think, Tesla has a structural advantage relative to the rest of the auto industry, because we make the cars and we service the cars, whereas I think there's a bit of a conflict of interest with the dealer model and the sort of traditional OEM and dealer model, where the dealerships make most of their money on service, and so they're disincented to reduce the servicing cost.
Yeah.
Whereas in our case, we are incented to reduce the servicing cost because we carry that servicing cost, and we've got a good feedback loop with our cars.
The best,
exactly.
Yeah.
Like we would be with the factory, with the service leaders together, and send people from the factory to the field and field to the factory to see it firsthand.
Exactly.
Provide suggestions for manufacturing as well as for engineering on design.
Yeah, so I view this as a fundamental structural advantage of Tesla versus the rest of the auto industry.
We're also doing a bunch of work on the software side, not only to automate diagnostics, so identifying what needs to be done to a car before it comes into service, but also automating all of the preparation work and aligning all of the resources that are necessary in order for the car to be very efficiently worked on once it arrives. So the parts are there, like the lift is scheduled, the technician schedule, like everything.
Yeah, like the car schedule. This is what's wrong with me, and tells the service center.
The car
and get everything ready in advance.
Yeah. Please fix me, and this is what's wrong.
Yeah. This is what you're recommending now.
Yeah.
Instead of customer trying to translate, the car is telling us directly, and we're pulling that. Yeah.
Yeah, you don't need, most of the time you don't need to diagnose the car
exactly
when it arrives. The car, this is like, again, a fundamental technology advantage and structural advantage compared to the rest of the auto industry.
I think it's underappreciated as to what all we are able to do.
Yeah.
And that's why, because like you said before, most of our cars, except for Cybertruck, look the same.
Yeah.
Right? So people don't realize that it has so much capability.
Yeah. They look better than other cars. Right? Yeah. but they're not like obviously like super futuristic.
Yes.
Great. Thank you very much. The next question is, please provide an update on the Semi. What will the next stage of growth look like, and when will FSD be ready?
Sure. So as we posted in the earnings deck, we're progressing swiftly on the build of the Semi factory in our data factory in Reno. We've released all our major capital expenditures for that program, and we're on track to start pilot builds in the second half of next year, with production starting the first half of 2026 and ramping really throughout the year to full production. Semi growth will largely depend on our customers' adoption of the product.
I don't think we're going to be demand limited, honestly.
Yeah, which I was going to say, which is like a no-brainer for the Semi, because it's really a commodity of total cost of ownership.
Yes, exactly. We have kind of ridiculous demand for the Semi.
World where it's about how much do I spend to move
goods
cents per mile, it's a no-brainer.
Fundamentally, if you've got a Semi where the fully considered cost per mile per ton of transport is better than, say, a diesel truck, any company that doesn't adopt an electric Semi will lose. It's not a subjective thing. It's like of whether do you like
the style. Competitive.
I mean, we want the style. We want to have a beautiful Semi truck. But frankly, if we made an ugly Semi truck, it wouldn't matter.
And this is proving so in our fleets and in Pepsi's partner. In fact, the Pepsi actually said last week they're having nobody want their drivers don't want to go back.
As soon as we give anyone the electric semi, it's like that's like the choice.
It's the what they want to drive.
Yeah. That's like so the like the most senior like their top drivers well they get to drive the Tesla semi. It's the thing they want to drive. It's super fun to drive.
It's also very easy to drive.
It's easy to drive and it holds ass. Yeah. It's like fast. Yeah.
Super fast. Maybe too fast.
Well, but I mean, like you've seen like the videos of where like the like Tesla electric semi like can go uphill, speeding past like the diesel truck.
Or even cars.
Yeah, even cars. It's responsive. You floor it and that truck actually moves.
And that's a benefit not only for the driver and for the goods, but also for safety in terms of other drivers on the road. You don't get stuck behind a semi. You're not in a slowdown situation in the on-ramp. I mean, how that plays into, FSD, which is the second part of the question. All of the semis have been, since the couple hundred we've deployed already and the ones that we'll be building next year and throughout the future, have all of the hardware and the cameras necessary to deploy FSD, and we're currently training with that small fleet that we have. And as soon as the fleet is trained and the neural nets are up, we'll get FSD onto that platform.
Yeah, I mean, it'll be a massive improvement in driver fatigue, and driver safety. We've got sort of the anti-jackknifing software.
Mm-hmm.
You don't have to worry about your brakes overheating if you go down a steep hill because we use regenerative. Like that energy goes back into the pack.
Actually, when we leave Reno,
it's just like it's like radically better than a diesel semi. It's why the drivers love it.
Yeah.
Great guys, thank you very much. Our next question is: when will Tesla incorporate X and Grok in all the Tesla vehicles?
Well, I mean, these are relatively small fry things, but yeah, we'll keep expanding, what is available in the car on the smart screen, and also improving like the browser, so like just generally you can access anything you want in the car. In fact, for the Tesla, once you get to full autonomy, you actually want fully a system that is can do anything. Like if you want to browse the internet, if you want to ask AI questions, if you want to watch a movie, if you want to play a video game, if you want to do some productivity thing, you can do anything you want in an autonomous vehicle because you don't need to drive. So that's why the Cybercab's got a nice big screen and a great sound system. So you can watch a great movie with, it's like being like in a
personal movie theater.
Yeah, personal movie theater. It's awesome.
Yeah, this is why we've been building this functionality, adding gaming to the car, adding movies and other, all sorts of different media applications to the car, because,
the cars
that's what you're gonna, that's, yeah, the cars that we build today.
There's some really fun games, by the way, if people haven't tried it. There's like Castle Doombad and Polytopia and a bunch of really fun games in the car.
Yeah, we're constantly looking at, what features to add next, and we're paying attention to what's most commonly requested by our customers.
Yeah, play Castle Doombat. You won't regret it.
Great. Thank you guys very much. The next question is, Elon mentioned unsupervised FSD in California and Texas next year. Does that mean regulators have agreed to it in the entire state for existing hardware 3 and 4 vehicles?
No, as I said earlier, California loves regulation.
But they have a pathway.
Yeah, I mean, there's a pathway. Obviously, Waymo operates in California, so there's just a lot of forms to fill out and a lot of approvals that are required. I'd be shocked if we don't get approval next year, but it's just not something we totally control. But I think we will get approval next year in California and Texas. And towards the end of the year, it will branch out beyond California and Texas.
I mean, I think it's important to reiterate this. Like, homologating or certifying a vehicle at the federal level in the U.S. is done by meeting FMVSS regulations. All our vehicles today that are produced that are autonomous capable meet all those regulations. The Cybercab will meet those regulations. And so the deployment of the vehicle to the road is not a limitation. What is a limitation is what you said at the state level, where they control autonomous vehicle deployment. Some states are relatively easy, as you mentioned, for Texas.
Yeah.
And so other ones have pathways, like California, that may take a little longer. Other ones haven't set up anything yet. And so we will work through those state by state and get it.
I do think we should have a federal.
I agree.
Like autonomous vehicles should be approved. There just should be, it should be possible to.
Congress, if you're listening, let's get a federal AV.
There should be a federal approval process for autonomous vehicles. I mean, that's how the FMVSS is
started and worked.
Federal motor vehicle, the F and FMVSS is federal.
Yeah, so I mean, in 2017 and 18, it's when regulators started looking at it, and it's really kind of stalled since then, but we would appreciate and would support helping out with those regulations.
It really needs to be at national approval is important. If there's a Department of Government Efficiency, I'll try to help make that happen. And it's for everyone, not just Tesla.
Yes.
Some things in the U.S. are state by state regulated, like, for example, insurance. And it's incredibly painful to do it state by state, 50 states. I think there should be a national approval process for autonomy. So.
Great. Thanks, guys. The next question is, what is the plan for 2025?
I mean, I think we're just talking.
We talked through this. There's a lot going on. Elon already mentioned that we're working on cheaper models to come out. I mean, there's work which the team is doing to get the factories ready today to try and make that happen.
By the way, the amount of work required to make a lower cost car is insanely high. But it is harder to get 20% of the cost out of a car than it is to design the car and build the entire factory in the first place.
Yeah.
It's excruciating. And there's not a lot of movies made about the heroes who got 20% of the cost out of a car. But let me tell you, there should be. Everyone who got that is incredibly heroic.
It's the little changes, and it's not like a silver.
Yeah, limit. It's like there should be the heroes who got 20% cost out of a car. It's like, damn, I have a lot of respect for them. I think you probably could make a compelling movie, but if people actually saw how hard it was to do that, you'd be like, whoa, that's damn hard.
Just yesterday, we were talking about potting.
There's a lot of, I do call it sort of like getting cost out of things. It's kind of like, it's like game of pennies. It's like Game of Thrones, but pennies. First approximation, if you've got 10,000 items in a car, very rough approximation, and each of them costs $4, then you have a $40,000 car. So then if you want to make a $35,000 car, you've got to get 50 cents on average out of the 10,000 items.
Every part.
Yeah. And it's like, and then obviously the best is you delete some parts. In fact, we found we're able to delete a lot of parts. I'm very excited about the Cybercab design how we're rethinking the design of a car for the Cybercab, designing it for ultra high volume production, and then designing a machine that builds the machine that I think is also revolutionary. And it's just, there's no other car company that's even trying to do what we're doing. I've even heard of it, actually. In fact, I'm certain there isn't one. I think our new machine that builds the machine, it's designed to be five times better than a traditional factory. Cycle time
and part deletion, material movement. I don't think any other car company has the same level of integration of thought that we have when it comes to when you design a part from a white sheet of paper, who's going to make it? Where is it going to be made? How's it going to be shipped? How's it going to be assembled into the vehicle? And at any one point, if something is done in a silo, it becomes a bottleneck of either cost or time or efficiency. But with the robotaxi, the development, we've done a good job on combining all that and then blowing up how it's made and saying it should be made this way and rethinking it all so that it's the most efficient factory possible. That shows in our CapEx efficiency when we deploy it. It shows in the number of parts, it shows in the simplicity of the vehicle, but also how it performs in terms of end user state.
Yeah.
Just to close out, just on the energy front also in 2025, we will have started manufacturing at the Mega Factory Shanghai. We'll continue to increase our overall storage deployments with Powerwall 3. We plan to continue expanding our supercharging network, getting more OEMs on our network, 4680 and cell ramp, as Elon talked about, that would keep going. And then we also will have our lithium refinery starting to produce. So there's a lot which is going on.
Great. Yeah, so many things.
Yeah.
I mean, crazy thing is, like, Tesla is winning basically on almost every single thing we're doing. If we're not winning now, we're on track to win. In arenas where there are entire large companies, that's the only thing they do.
Yeah. I mean, it's a company. There are multiple companies within the company.
Yeah, Tesla is like many companies within one.
Yeah.
Fantastic. Thank you, guys. Just a few more. What is going on with the Tesla Roadster?
Fun things.
Well, I just would like to thank our long-suffering deposit holders of the Tesla Roadster. You know, the reason it hasn't come out yet is because the Roadster is not just the icing on the cake; it's the cherry on the icing on the cake. And so, you know, our larger mission is to accelerate the progress towards a sustainable energy future. You know, try to do things that maximize the probability that the future is good for humanity and for Earth. And so that necessarily means that, like, the things like that are kind of like dessert. We'd all love to work on the next gen Tesla Roadster. It is super fun, and we are working on it. But it has to come behind the more things that have a more serious impact on the good of the world. So just thank you to all our long-suffering Tesla Roadster deposit holders, and we are actually finally making progress on that, we're close to finalizing the design on that. It's really going to be something spectacular. You know, a friend of mine, Peter Thiel, sometimes people think that Peter Thiel and I are rivals. We're really good friends. To be clear, Peter, was lamenting how, the future doesn't have flying cars. Well, we'll see.
More to come.
Yeah.
Great. Thank you very much. The next one is quite similar to other questions we've had, so I might combine it with the final question. So briefly, could you just detail how Robotaxi will roll out? Will it start with a Tesla deployed fleet and then allow customers to add theirs on, like a subscription model? And then will hardware 3 be capable of level 5 at this point?
As regarding the hardware 3, what we saw with 12.5 was it was easier to make rapid progress with starting with hardware 4. And figuring out the solution, and then backporting it to hardware 3 instead of directly working on hardware 3, given that hardware 4 has more like fundamental hardware capabilities. I think that trend will continue into the next few quarters as well, where we first figure out the solution rapidly with AI4 and then backport it, write the kernels. It just takes longer to develop those things because it's not fundamentally supported in the hardware and it's emulated. Initially working on hardware 4, backporting it to hardware 3.
Yeah, so it's, I guess the answer is we're not 100% sure, but our as Ashok mentioned, because by some measures hardware 4 has really has several times the capability of hardware 3. It's easier to get things to work with hardware 4, and then it takes a lot of effort to sort of squeeze that functionality into hardware 3. There is some chance that hardware 3 does not achieve the safety level that allows for unsupervised FSD. There is some chance of that. And if that turns out to be the case, we will upgrade those who have bought hardware 3 FSD for free. And we have designed the system to be upgradable. It's really just to sort of switch out the computer type of thing. The cameras are okay. They're capable, but anyway, we don't actually know the answer to that. But if it does turn out, we'll make sure we take care of those who have bought FSD on hardware 3.
Great. In the last few minutes that we have left, we will try to get in some analyst questions. The first question will be coming from Pierre Ferragu at New Street. Pierre, please feel free to unmute yourself.
Thanks a lot, guys, for taking my question. I was wondering about like the compute you're ramping up. So you gave like interesting statistics on how much you have, and you said you don't feel your compute constrained. And I was wondering, you know, how you are putting to work this additional compute. Is that a game for you of creating like larger and larger models, like next generation of models that are larger the way OpenAI go from GPT-3 to GPT-4? Or is that more like you're set on your model and you need to throw more and more compute to accelerate the pace of learning to improve reliability? And then I had a quick follow-up real quick on your rollout in Texas and in California next year. The plan as you see today, is it to roll out like a fleet or two with cars that will start with like a supervisory, like some onboard supervision, someone sitting at the wheel just in case, and removing the supervisors progressively? Or are you aiming for going fully fledged without even a human supervisor when you get started?
Okay, well, I guess I'll answer the first part of the question. The nature of real world AI is different from, say, an LLM in that you have a massive amount of context. So that like you've got a case of Tesla, 7 or 8 cameras. That you know, up to nine if you include the internal camera, you've got gigabytes of context, and that is then distilled down into a small number of control outputs. You know, whereas it's like you don't really, it's very rare to have. In fact, I'm not sure any LLM out there can do gigabytes of context. And then you've got to then process that in the car with a very small amount of compute power. You know, it's all doable and it's happening. But it is a different problem than what say a Gemini or an OpenAI is doing. Now. Part of the way you can make up for the fact that the inference computer is quite small is by spending a lot of effort on training. And just like a human, like you, the more you train on something, the less mental workload it takes when you do it. Like when the first time like a human starts driving, it absorbs your whole mind. But then as you train more and more on driving, get very good, then the driving camera becomes a background task. It only absorbs a small amount of your mental capacity because you have a lot of training. So we can make up for the fact that the inference computer is it's tiny compared to, you know, a 10 kilowatt bank of GPUs, because you've got a few hundred watts of inference compute. We can make up for that with heavy training. And then there's also vast amounts of the actual, you know, petabytes of data coming in are tremendous. And then sorting out what training is important with, you know, of the vast amounts of video training or video data coming in from the fleet, what is actually most important for training? That's also quite difficult. But as I said, we're not currently training compute constraint. I'm not sure if you want to elaborate on that.
Yeah, like you mentioned, the training has both trained larger models, also to train quicker. But in the end, we still got to pick which models are performing better. So the validation effort to picking the models, because the miles per intervention is pretty large, we have to drive a lot of miles to go in closed loop. We do have simulation and other ways to get those metrics, those to help, but in the end, that's a big bottleneck. Yeah, that's why we're not training compute constraint alone. And there's other axis of scaling as well, which is like data, figuring out which data is more useful. That is an important task, and we're focusing on that.
So as it relates to the second part of your question, Pierre, about safety drivers and rolling it out, each state has different requirements that, you know, in terms of how many miles and how much time you need to have a safety driver and not have a safety driver. We're going to follow all those. We're not going to violate whatever regulations are out there with safety as a priority. But the goal is obviously that when we're ready and safety is there, we'll remove all the drivers from the rideshare program.
Yeah, I mean, I guess like we think that we'll be able to have driverless Teslas doing paid rides next year, sometime next year.
All right, thank you. And our next question comes from Adam Jonas at Morgan Stanley. Adam, please feel free to unmute yourself.
Okay, thanks everybody. Just had a question about the relationship between Tesla and XAI. Many investors are still not clear how the work at XAI is truly beneficial to Tesla. Some even take the view that the two companies may even be in competition with each other in terms of talent and tech, and even your time, Elon. So what's your message to investors on that relationship between Tesla and XAI, and where do you see it going over time? Thanks.
Well, I should say that, you know, XAI has been helpful to Tesla AI quite a few times in terms of, things like scaling up, like training, even like recently in the last week or so, improvements in fault-tolerant training, where if you're doing a big training run and a node fails, being able to continue training and easily recover from on a training run, XAI has been pretty helpful. But there are different problems. You know, XAI is working on artificial general intelligence or artificial super intelligence. Tesla is trying to make autonomous cars and autonomous robots. They're different problems.
I think we've said this before also, like not all AI is equal, right? I mean, AI is a broad spectrum.
Yeah.
And we have our own swim lanes. Yes, there are certain things which we can collaborate on if needed, but for the most part, we're solving different issues.
Yeah, Tesla's focused on real-world AI. And like I was saying earlier, it is quite a bit different from an LLM. You have massive context in the form of video and some amount of audio that's got to be distilled with extremely efficient inference compute. I do think Tesla's the most efficient in the world in terms of inference compute, because out of necessity, we have to be very good at efficient inference. We can't put 10 kilowatts of GPUs in a car. We've got a couple hundred watts, and it's pretty well designed Tesla AI chip, but it's still a couple hundred watts. But there are different problems. I mean, it's just, the stuff that XAI is when it's running inference. I mean, it is running inference. Answering questions, it's answering Tesla's questions on a 10 kilowatt rack. It's like, yeah, put that in a car. It's a different problem.
Please no.
No, exactly. XAI is because I felt there wasn't a truth-seeking digital superintelligence company out there. Like, that's what it came down to. There needed to be a truth-seeking, an AI company that is just very rigorous about being truthful. I'm not saying XAI is perfect, but that is that is at least the explicit aspiration. Even if something is, politically incorrect, it should still be truthful. I think this is very important for AI safety. So anyway, I think XAI has been helpful to Tesla and will continue to be helpful to Tesla, but there are very different problems.
Great.
You know, and I mean, like, if you also think of like what is, like, what other car company has it has a world class chip design team? Like, zero. What other car company has a world class AI team like Tesla does? Zero. Those were all startups. They're created from scratch.
Great. Thank you, Elon. And I think that's unfortunately all the time that we have for today. We appreciate all of your questions and we look forward to hearing you next quarter. Thank you very much and goodbye.
All right. Hey, everybody. Just going to give me 1 second here. We've got a lot to talk about. Give me an audio set. Let me know if that level's good for everybody. And then we'll just go through some of the things that we heard. Hopefully everyone had a chance to go through or to watch the shareholder letter reaction earlier. Obviously we got a lot of news there, but a very interesting call as well. So I think we've got some exciting stuff to go through. So we can kind of just go through an order. I'm just going to look here. Volume is low. Volume good. Okay. Yeah, it was a little bit low before. Sounds like we're good. All right. So yeah. Exciting. I think that's the overall takeaway for me is this kind of felt like an older days Tesla call. And for those that didn't have a chance to listen earlier, you know, one of the things that I said is that we're in a period right now where Tesla is very much shifting their priorities. They're working on a lot of stuff that is behind the scenes that doesn't necessarily come through in quarterly reports. And as I was sitting here and thinking about this earnings call versus like earnings calls that we've had over the last few quarters, I'm glad Tesla is a public company, but this is one of the major disadvantages of being a public company is when you have periods of time like this, there just gets to be so much just negativity around the company because of a few quarters worth of results. Like if Tesla were a private company, we go through periods like that, no problem. No one really cares too much about like, all right, this quarter was 2% lower than last quarter or whatever else. Because the time horizon, the holding period, it's so much longer that there's just an ability to stay focused on those longer term things. And I think Tesla, they had a good quarter. That's helping improve the sentiment. And then there's a lot of like tangible progress towards where Tesla is going next. They're starting to work on a lot of these things. They're starting to realize a lot of what is to come and be able to articulate those things, which maybe over the last year they've been working on them, but it just hasn't been close enough to be kind of like getting that excitement level up yet. And Tesla still tries to do that. They still try to reiterate, you know, this is what's coming, but you hear that so many times, so many quarters in a row, and then you see like the financial results not yielding any of that yet, because obviously it's still in development. People just get really down and really negative. And I think this quarter is a little bit of a breath of fresh air, both for the underlying business and today's business, but also just like the Robotaxi events. You know, some of the things Elon said here, like Cybercab 2026, he's viewing that as volume production. I think that's a lot quicker than what people maybe expected coming out of the Robotaxi event, where Elon had said, you know, 2026, it might be 2027, which we should definitely keep that in mind. But it seems like he was referencing more of volume production versus without that clarifier. I think the natural expectation or the natural assumption should be that's just start of production. So for him to be, you know, talking about volume production 2026, like that's going to be here sooner than we know. Reiterating more affordable vehicles next year, we'll talk a little bit more about that. We're just starting to get to, you know, more exciting things happening for the business, which again have been in the works, but it just... Any business, there's going to be periods of time where things plateau. And, you know, when you're a public company and you report quarterly, people get really, really upset by that sort of stuff. So I think this is just a good opportunity to, you know, to realize. And now with some of the, like the positive reaction, it just helps people be more confident in those types of things and kind of like mentally reinvest a little bit in what Tesla is doing, what they're trying to achieve, and get kind of that buy-in and more positive sentiment, which I think, you know, just helps the business, obviously helps the share price, things like that. So I'm excited to see that. I think you guys know whenever the stock is down 10% after earnings, those are the kind of things that I reiterate. But, you know, I think people are just more eyes open to it when we do have a more positive report like this. So throughout the call, I think the team did a good job. I think Elon did a good job. I think you articulated what Tesla is doing well, seemed to be in very good spirits. So always good to see those types of things too. All right, so those things being said, let's just hop in here and go through kind of like point by point. There's a lot of stuff, so I am going to look at these very closely. I try to like go through fast, but I don't want to miss anything because I had a number of thoughts as Tesla went through things. All right, so achieved overall, you know, record deliveries. I don't know if that was a Q3 record or total record. I'd have to go back and look at that. Other EV companies, EV divisions, not profitable. Very few companies report, right, their EV itemized businesses. We've got like Rivian and Lucid, obviously purely EVs, BYD, although their financials, it's always a little bit trickier to trust when the company is in, you know, based in China. It's like, all right, are some of these financials being shifted over to another company and, you know, positive impact for BYD that's then showing negative on another company. It's things like that are a little bit more difficult to know and to trust, particularly with BYD. But for the US companies, certainly, it's, you know, the road to profitability has been arduous, to say the least. So I think good that Elon reiterated that. And obviously, this quarter was particularly strong relative to last quarter, just in the fundamental strength of the business. Again, for those that didn't listen earlier, one of the items that we still need to kind of keep an eye on, which was not answered during this earnings call, is how much of the automotive gross profit was contributed from FSD revenue recognition, which they did highlight as one of the items that contributed positively. We won't know until we get the 10Q how much of an impact that was. So that could be hundreds of millions of dollars, which could really change how people interpret this report. So it's going to be a very important item to look at. Hopefully it's a small amount, but we just have to wait and see. So 7 millionth vehicle produced. That's awesome. I mean, Tesla's knocking it out of the park when you look at the long-term perspective. And it's just so nice to see all these electric vehicles on the road. Energy storage business, obviously doing excellent. I know Vaibhav said some things, CFO said some things about sort of the margins. It's tough, you know, just trying to understand and then also take notes when he's speaking. So I do have to go back and look at some of those things. I know he mentioned a couple things on margin. One for sure though is that he does expect next quarter energy storage deployments to increase. This quarter, obviously, we saw them decrease as we had a huge Q2, dropped off in Q3 as those deployments are a little bit lumpy. So totally expected, not surprising. They kind of alluded to that last quarter in the earnings call. And this quarter, kind of the opposite. So we should see that kind of bounce back next quarter, which is really exciting. More than 100% growth year over year. I don't know exactly off the top of my head what it was last year, but that kind of gives us some guidance for Q4. And they also said they expect delivery growth in automotive for the year as well. So that can kind of back into some Q4 numbers as well. So as we talked about, you know, 50 autonomous vehicles operating, Tesla had previously said 1300 rides. Most rides had, you know, two people in it at least. Some of the Model Ys, I'm sure, had probably more. So yeah, thousands of people being transported around all night, no incidents, things like that. More affordable models in the first half of 2025. It was a little bit, I don't know, obscured or whatever, but it sounded like they said that these vehicles would be $30,000 after incentives. Now there are state incentives. I know the big one is the $7,500 federal tax credit. They could technically include state incentives in there too. You know, I think there are a few states with a couple thousand dollars. I think California being one, obviously Colorado. So they could technically be including those. They could technically include gas savings, which is what, you know, the website design studio configurator does. So just keep those things in mind. Hopefully they're only talking about the $7,500 thing, which could mean the, you know, the vehicle starting at like $37,000 or something like that. Again, I don't think that's the $25,000 car. I shared my thoughts on this before. I don't think there's a $25,000 car that's really still happening. I think it's the Cybercab and they're all in on that. And I don't think it's going to come with a steering wheel. I don't think it's going to come with pedals as a variant. And I think Elon, you know, kind of made that clear on this call. So nevertheless, with those more affordable models, which we'll see what those are, if those are just updates to the 3 and the Y, or if there's, you know, some other model as well, something like 20 to 30% next year. It sounded like, though, they also feel like FSD and the progress there is going to contribute to overall vehicle demand as that improves. It seemed like that was a part of, I think Lars was talking at that point. I think that's one of the levers they view as a demand lever, is just that improving. So we'll see about that. and then interest rates, obviously, that was mentioned later on in the call. If those continue to come down, which that's obviously the expectation, I think we're already seeing the benefit of that here in the third quarter and early in the fourth quarter. If that trend continues, then, you know, that's definitely a win for affordability and for margins and things like that. All right, so volume production of CyberCab, we talked about that one. No surprise, but aiming for at least 2 million per year, maybe 4 million per year ultimately, and multiple factories obviously required to produce that kind of volume. And I don't think people fully appreciate, like, how crazy this is. if you think about these vehicles even getting, you know, let's say, I think Elon has said like 5 times the utility. Let's just say 2 times or 3 times the utility of what a normal car would get. If you get that up to, you know, 3-4 million cars a year, you're talking about really the utility of like 10 million cars per year, which is obviously a very significant portion of the auto market at that point. So it starts to get pretty big pretty fast once CyberCab starts, if, of course, autonomy is, you know, achieves level 4, level 5 at that point, which is a very big question mark. But they shared some of the details on that, a little bit more numbers than we have seen. So we'll talk about those in a second. Now, all that sort of stuff, 20 to 30% growth, CyberCab volume. Elon said these are just his best guesses. So important to keep that in mind. 4680, rapidly approaching the point where it's the most competitive, cost competitive battery cell, fully landed cost being considered. So net of incentives they mentioned and import duties. So, you know, if you're bringing in cells from China, obviously there's going to be some additional cost to doing that, both from shipping and duty perspective, and then not being eligible for certain incentives. So those are some pretty significant differences, but they all matter. They all affect the business. So it's good to hear that. Sounds like there's a number of things that they're continuing to make progress on. I think the optimism in general, like the tone around 4680, has definitely been consistently improving over the last couple of quarters. Versus, you know, maybe a year ago or so, there was probably not quite as much optimism in how it was spoken about. So I'm definitely excited with the 4680 updates that we've had. And it seems like it's already in a pretty good spot, which is good because that means Tesla can continue to invest more and more into it, get more economies of scale, continue to make improvements as they make those further investments, things like that. It's a very positive sort of feedback loop on the 4680s. And I think we're kind of hitting that point, which is really great. Still continue to buy cells from others. Yeah, Elon's always said that. Significant improvement week by week in the number of miles per intervention for FSD. It's important to note that they always talk about critical interventions too. I think we're getting to a point, and I think Tesla's kind of talked about this in a few different ways, but getting to the point where maybe one of the bigger challenges is filtering out, all right, this person disengaged because, you know, the speed wasn't fast enough, or maybe it's a minor routing thing or something like that, or like just wanting to be in a different lane, something that you would optimize for but isn't necessarily safety critical. I think that's probably the majority of interventions, at least me personally, that's probably how my interventions work, in just terms of like percentage breakdown. So I don't know how Tesla kind of categorizes those when they're getting that data. I assume it has something to do with kind of how shadow mode would work and seeing, you know, the deviation between shadow mode and, you know, what FSD would have done versus what the person then did after engagement. I assume there's some sort of process in there to kind of check and filter around those types of things. But however they're categorizing the data, however they're looking at it, it's clearly been making them very confident in the progress and the trajectory over the last year. And they continue to be very excited about version 13, continuing to reiterate that that should be a 5 to 6x improvement, which is already on top of 100x improvement in terms of critical disengagements that they have seen so far this year. So that's kind of the first time that we've really gotten that sort of specific insight into that specific metric that Tesla looks at. I would love it if they would publish that, but it does make things a little bit tricky because then, you know, everyone's going to want to see this very smooth progress. And if you see a period where it doesn't happen, then people become negative. So it's the exact same thing that we talked about at the beginning here, public versus private company, you know, public versus private data. There's not a lot of benefit to publishing that, especially when Tesla's not capital constrained. They don't need to raise money. They don't really need to like sell investors. So might as well just keep that data internal. I'm fine with that. I would love to see it, but I also understand. So it's nice that they're seeing significant improvements. I mean, I don't know if 100x matches my experience, but like I said, 12.3.6, massive step forward. You know, I would say just like anecdotally from my own experience, has to have been like 10x. I also moved, right, kind of during that period. So it's, you know, I'm not in my same area doing my same testing and things like that. So it's kind of a different environment, which changes perception as well. Anyway, year over year improvement expected to be at least three orders of magnitude, which is crazy. So, you know, in the ballpark of 1,000x improvements in the disengagement or in the critical disengagement rate. And then maybe the most important thing is that they said they expect that same trend to continue next year. If that means they expect another three times or three order of magnitude improvement next year, then you're talking about 1,000 on 1,000, which is like 1,000,000 times better. So it kind of gives you, you know, even if they don't get to that, then I think that's why they're confident, is like, if they're anywhere close, it should be good. So it gives some insight into why they're so confident. Now, obviously that is something that still needs to happen, and any number of things could cause that to not happen, but that's what they're seeing. And as Ashok talked about on previous calls, there's a number of different categories that they've seen the technology scale on in a trajectory that they could kind of model and expect. They've already seen that unfold. So if they then have clear visibility to those things continuing to be able to scale in the same way, then the logic following that is that if those continue to all scale in the same way, then hopefully the end product can continue to scale in the same way as well. So, you know, that's the reason that they're feeling so confident in these improvements. So we'll look forward to version 13. I do think, just even as a tester, you know, at a certain point it does become difficult to understand what the progress is because the disengagements are rare. I don't think we're there yet, but I also don't think that we're super far away from that starting to actually become even difficult for testers to kind of like make assessments of. Yeah, if scaling continues, should cross intervention threshold next year. And then importantly, they continue, like, they don't see that as kind of a ceiling. They expect continued rapid improvements kind of after crossing that threshold, which is, again, another reason for renewed confidence. You know, the further out you go, the more uncertainty there is. But if they feel like, yeah, it's just this path that next year we hit at, you know, Q2, Q3 timeframe, but then we continue to go and it 1,000x's again or something like that, then it really does feel like it's just a matter of time. And if you don't hit it in Q2, then you hit it in Q3 or Q4, or, you know, things like that. So it's projections. Projections don't always equal reality, but hopefully that gives some insight on, you know, at least how I think they're thinking about it. All right. So do you want to expose more people to FSD? So obviously they just did a trial of, I think, 12.5.6. I don't know. It's a little confusing with the version numbers how they are right now. But yeah, I think they should keep doing that, especially if they are feeling like they're data constrained and not compute constrained so much. It's hard to know if more cars does help with the specific issues that they're having of finding those critical disengagements and things like that, but it would seem like it would. So yeah, free trial away. Might as well, right? Take advantage of the fleet. So I think that's great. They also talked about significant improvement in the take rate. Again, this is something that they don't publish. It would be nice to see, but I understand, again, why not, especially because it is improving from a very low base. But nice to see that. And interesting that even the, you know, the October 10th event, even that improved the take rate, which, you know, nothing changed with FSD that day. It's just people becoming aware. So shout out to advertising right there, because that's why you do advertising. That's the hope of the effect of advertising, is increasing the awareness of these things. So hopefully that's an eye opener, but probably not. Which, it's fine. At the end of the day, ultimately what matters more is getting to FSD, getting to Robotaxi, getting to Cybercab. As long as the cash flow is there to do that, then these incremental improvements in margin in the interim period, like, they're nice. They help support the stock. They help improve sentiment. More money is always great for the business, but it doesn't really change things all that much, I don't think. So while I'd like to see it, sometimes it probably gets a little bit too much attention versus the other things that really should be the focus. Actually, Smart Summon, I haven't really used it in... I don't drive a whole lot, so I haven't really had a real need to use it yet. Unfortunately, I've just kind of tested it out. It was fine for me. You know, other people have way more experience with it than I do, so can't comment too much on it. But obviously, it gives a taste of what things are going to be, and hopefully, we kind of see, like, actually Smart Summon merge into FSD, and it's kind of like a limited operating domain right now, with speed limit restrictions, geographical restrictions on, like, not public roads and things like that. Hopefully you just kind of see these things, like, merge together, and all of a sudden it's, you know, fully autonomous everywhere. But if they do improve speed limits and things like that, it's just, like, slowly, incrementally increasing the operational driving domain of, you know, autonomous driving, which is existing in the Smart Summon feature. This one was very interesting. So probably no one really thought that this was happening, I don't think, but Tesla's already using the Tesla network, like a Tesla network app on employees' phones, to do ride sharing in the Bay Area. So if you're, I don't know, again, what the region is, but it sounds like for employees, you can just use the Tesla network on your phone, call the vehicle. There's a safety driver in there at this point, obviously, but it shows that Tesla is working on, you know, all the fundamental pieces of having this be an app. You sometimes hear from people that Tesla can't compete with Uber or Lyft because they don't have these things in place, but they do. Like, they are in place. I never thought they were difficult to copy in the first place, but it's, I think, probably very exciting to people to hear that this is something that Tesla actually has now that does work. And it's more about just growing it and expanding it. So again, ultimately, it's really about FSD, but it is nice to see that, you know, Tesla's already starting to do these things. And, you know, when it is employees and it is sort of a safety driver role, that allows them to get really good data on, you know, how effective this is, how safe, like, what are the disengagements for those specific use cases in those specific areas, and start to build that data, build that confidence, and things like that. So I'm actually really excited to hear that. Expect to roll out ride hailing in California and Texas next year. So again, I don't think Tesla, like, cares too much about, okay, we're doing Tesla network and we have, like, drivers like Uber or Lyft would. I know ARC's been big on that for many years. I've never cared about that because I don't think Tesla cares about that. And kind of their answer reflected that, right? Like, the answer was basically, we'll do whatever we need to from a regulatory perspective to collect whatever data we need to do, but it's not the goal. The goal is to get autonomous vehicles, driverless vehicles. That's the singular focus. They don't really care about, like, building up some, like, Tesla network effect before that, because once something's autonomous and electric, the costs are going to be so low that why would you choose anything else? Plus, like we talked about before earnings came out today, it's going to be such a much more premium experience to not have to get in a car with a stranger and have them drive you around, and you don't know how good of a driver they are, and maybe you don't want to talk to them, and, like, all these sort of things, versus getting in, like, your own little personal movie theater. It's, you know, it's going to be quiet, it's going to have good entertainment, it's going to have a good sound system, all these sort of things, and it's going to drive safely, you know, once it gets to a certain point. There's literally no reason to, unless you're, like, very social, to try to get in an Uber or Lyft once this exists. So I don't think adoption rate is going to be the challenge with those sort of things. So anyway, back to this point, though, I'm excited to see that they, you know, initially are going to roll this out, and it probably will have a safety driver at first, but it sounds like that would just be because of, you know, showing the data from a regulatory perspective to be able to remove that driver as fast as they can. You know, if there's no other path, then obviously that's the path that Tesla has to follow, was kind of my takeaway on that. Yeah, so obviously profound inflection point for the company. Safety report, so again, something we would have talked about in Tesla Daily, but if you guys didn't see the safety report, the best way to look at that is sort of the year-over-year progress. So there can be some seasonality in the data there, but like we've looked at in the past, the trend overall on you know, accidents when FSD is engaged or when autopilot is engaged continues to be, you know, very strongly positive. And now that we're many years into it, like, you can definitely see significant improvement in that time period. So the best way to look at that is year over year or rolling 12 month, or, you know, maybe even rolling like 6 or 9 months, but continues to show progress. So that's exciting to see. Expanding training capacity. Yep. So we know that, not constrained. So we talked about that. Having a giant fleet is very helpful in that regard, obviously. The Optimus hand. So we talked about that a little bit earlier today. I thought Elon was going to say something about like the timing, but I think he got distracted on his train of thought and like went a different direction. It sounded like he was going to say when that next version of Optimus was going to be, but I don't think he ever did, unfortunately. Yeah, other humanoid companies, I don't know, personally not like super excited about. I think I agree very strongly with what Elon said here. Tesla has the AI capability, they have the production capability. I think it would be very difficult to compete with Tesla on this. So 200 packs a week, 40 gigawatt hour run rates. Sounds like Shanghai will scale similarly to how Lathrop scaled, with starting to bring a, you know, kind of one line on, which could do 20 gigawatt hours, and then I'm sure they'll expand and do a second line and 40 gigawatt hours. Elon saying it won't be long before we're shipping, you know, 100 gigawatt hours per year. The last, you know, we're at, I guess like a 30 gigawatt hour per year run rate right now, over the last two quarters, roughly. So yeah, another tripling. Won't be long. Ultimately growing to multiple terawatt hours per year. So yeah, I think, you know, once you get Shanghai, Lathrop fully on board, it seems to me like they could probably even improve this beyond 40 gigawatt hours at Lathrop, which if they do that, then that could probably even happen at Shanghai too. Maybe those two alone could do 100 gigawatt hours. And, you know, maybe you start to see that in 2026 even. So yeah, very exciting on the energy business, and obviously very strong margins there so far. All right, some more energy stuff. I think it's important to reiterate that Tesla's focused on building the future of these things. Others are focused on near-term trends. Again, it's like that public versus private company split. Like, Tesla should and kind of does operate as though they are a private company that just happens to be public. So it's just, you know, it's worth keeping those things in mind. It's about the long-term vision. That's what Tesla's focused on. Elon again thinking Tesla will become the most valuable company in the world. Financial stuff, we kind of went through all that. Awareness gap, plan to make that awareness gap smaller. I don't know if that was specific to ASP or if it was, I think it was probably about the financing things. Sustaining the margins in the fourth quarter will likely be challenging, so important to note that. That could temper some of the enthusiasm. And again, we'll have to see what the margins look like, excluding the FSD recognition this quarter, which we don't have yet. Interest rates, fluctuation in energy, margin fluctuation in energy as well. Backlog grew quarter over quarter in energy, which is great to hear since they are delivering such high volumes. I didn't really fully catch the automotive cost of goods sold comments, but it sounded like the comments were just directionally they're going to continue to try to drive those down, which obviously makes sense, but is difficult. CapEx. All right, so here we get into the questions. So still on track to deliver more affordable model next year. So plan for lower cost vehicles next year. Robotaxi is the marriage of EV and autonomy, but obviously that's not next year. And then I didn't catch the full comment, but He said something about something being sub 30,000 with incentives. If anyone has like what language he used, pop that in the chat. I'll try to keep an eye on it. But otherwise, have to go back and listen to that part, which just starts at the beginning of the investor questions. But yeah, to me, that makes me think something will come in sort of like that $35,000 price range. I think that's the plan for vehicles until Robotaxi. And again, I think Robotaxi, no steering wheel, no pedals. So I don't think we're going to see like a $25,000 car that is just a normal car that you can buy and go drive around. Very clear that the future is autonomous. So again, reiterating that right after this question of like, are there more affordable models next year? Well, Robotaxi is coming, so it doesn't really matter too much. Waymo, 1,000 cars, Tesla makes 35,000 cars a week. So he said a lot of great things about just the manufacturing process of Cybercab and the production design, which, you know, you look at the vehicle, especially like the interior, like, yeah, this is like, it's just kind of like any other car. It's simple. Not that it, you know, it does look a little bit different, but fundamentally looks like a car. And that doesn't really give you the insight that Tesla has into how it came to look like that and be produced and manufactured in that way. So, you know, they're thinking that this is somewhere on the order of like 5 times better. I don't know if that means versus like a Tesla benchmark or just other companies where maybe Tesla feels like they're already like 2 times better. So this is more like a 2.5 times from that. That's probably more of what I would think. But yeah, it's exciting to hear their optimism on the manufacturing process, which I think is probably an extension of what we heard for the, you know, Master Plan Part 3 when they kind of broke down the unbox process and things like that. So, you know, that's where Elon said, yeah, that would then roughly cost $25,000. He could be talking about the cost to produce it, which then, yeah, you could sell it for $30,000, less than $30,000, which that matches up with his comments during Robotaxi Day. So I think that makes sense, and that's, again, why I don't expect anything in that price range that, you know, has a steering wheel or things like that, because that would then, you know, add to the cost. He said won't have a steering wheel, won't have pedals, but you could buy one. Service center stuff, yeah, I mean, obviously Tesla's always working on that. Semi, continue to be super excited about Semi. It's just, you know, one of those things where there's going to be years long development process, and then at some point it's going to start to contribute to the business, similar to, you know, what we've seen for Cybertruck. But really excited about Semi incorporating X and Grok. Nothing too interesting on that point. Unsupervised FSD, so we kind of have already talked about that stuff. Yeah, what's the plan for 2025? Kind of already talked about that stuff as well. Roadster, they're close to finalizing the design. I thought they had maybe already finalized it or had said this before, so it doesn't seem like any major update there, unfortunately, for those interested in Roadster. Probably still be a bit. Robotaxi rollout. So, you know, very much acknowledge that it's going to continue to make, you know, the first versions, as we get them updated, are going to ship on Hardware 4 now. Then back into Hardware 3 as they can optimize those newer versions. So it sounds like that'll continue. Not too surprising, as we started to see that, you know, in the last few months. I think the question was, unfortunately, the question was kind of long, so it was multiple questions rolled into one, which, for those of you that remember when I did, you know, submitted my say questions and went through them and things like that, you got to be very specific and pointed with your questions. Otherwise, they're going to answer something else and not answer what you actually asked. So just reiterating that feedback. But in terms of Hardware 3 versus Hardware 4, again, they said they're not exactly sure how that'll look. They're just going to have to wait and see how it comes together. They did say that if Hardware 3 can't achieve, you know, level 5 autonomous driving or whatever, however Tesla wants to benchmark that, that they would upgrade people with Hardware 3 for free. Now, previously, I thought they had said that there's not really a path to do that Hardware 3 to Hardware 4 upgrade. Maybe they just mean they'll like offer some discounts on a trade-in vehicle. Like, that would seem like it would be the more probably easier and cost-effective path. but who knows? Maybe I'm wrong on that. Maybe they can't upgrade it. Maybe they only need to upgrade a part of it, whatever. Tesla will figure that out. The point that I added here in parentheses is just that Tesla's going to try really, 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 really hard to not have to do that because it would be very expensive. So they'll keep trying. It could, you know, they could spend years trying to make it work for hardware 3. So just keep that in mind before getting too excited about it. I agree Tesla should do this. I think it's the right thing. I think, you know, upgrading those vehicles then allows them to contribute revenue to the Tesla network as well. So there is some financial incentive there to do it for Tesla as well. But just try to keep that in mind that they'll probably try to do that for a long time before sort of admitting defeat and allowing those upgrades. Excess compute capacity. I don't think we really got a good answer on that. You know, simulation. I don't think they really specifically answered that, which again, it was part of, you know, I think multiple questions were asked, so they kind of just picked out other things. Safety drivers, yeah, state by state, nothing new there. And then Adam Jonas's question, so I've shared my thoughts on XAI and Tesla before, so probably don't need to spend much time on that. But yeah, overall, I think just exciting to see, you know, a positive reaction. It's, I think, there's kind of been some beat downs after the last the last few earnings reports, so nice to have a reminder that it's not always that way. And I think it's, you know, it's a combination of the positive gross margin that we saw, which led to a beat on the bottom line, and people being more optimistic about what Tesla has in terms of flexibility on pricing and continuing to drive that volume up. The reiteration of more affordable models next year, I think that's, you know, positive. Cybertruck, positive gross margin, also a positive. Obviously, tremendous progress with Tesla Energy. They posted a good number with good margins, and services and other also contributing positively too. So just a lot of fundamentally good things in the earnings report itself. And then, you know, that positivity, I think, bleeds through to a lot of the commentary that we heard today, which some of which were, you know, again, reiterating the more affordable vehicles, the, you know, 2026 being volume production for the Cybercab versus before maybe people thought, all right, maybe that's start of production, maybe that actually slips to 2027. That's just projections. We'll see. It's a long ways away still, but for that to be, you know, the volume production target is definitely encouraging, just in terms of, you know, the time that it's going to take to get there. So I think a lot of good things in that regard. A little bit more detail on kind of like the rollout plan. Hearing that they're actually using the Tesla network, I think, is very exciting and encouraging to a lot of people. So I think a lot of really good things here today. In terms of more negative things, I don't know. I'm sure there are some. They're not coming to mind as much right now. I think overall pretty positive. I think the biggest question that I've got is just the, you know, how much the FSD revenue recognition contributed, because obviously that's a more of a one-time thing that would be backed out in terms of projections for the future. So we should get that information in the 10-Q in the next few days, so definitely keep an eye out for that. But that's it. So if you want to check out the earnings report recap, again, the link for that's in the description. But always appreciate getting back and chatting Tesla with everybody here for a minute. Appreciate all the super chats. It's always, you know, I'm so appreciative of that, for you guys supporting. And, you know, at the latest, we'll definitely be back for next quarter. I think some people maybe didn't get the message, but my plan is to continue to do these quarterly at least. So I'll be here, you know, next quarter for the Q4 earnings. Otherwise, things are great. Everything's really solid with First Principles Group. I think my decision to have to upgrade to hardware 4 here is they're making me more convinced with the commentary here. So that's probably going to happen. So if you want to use my referral link, and if you're making a similar decision too, that's also in the description. Appreciate that. But thank you all. We'll wrap it up. But it's been a fun day and good to see everybody.